Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, I think we have some housekeeping items today before we jump into the episode.
We do. We got a couple of updates. One of our episodes, we weren't sure, you know, how relevant it was going to be or not when we talked about declaring a national emergency and what the president could do with those. Well, it looks like he's going to do it for his border wall.
It was such an emergency, he waited about a month and a half and then did it.
Yeah. So
Very pressing.
So, of course, they're talking about all the different options that people have, that legal challenges. And Congress, one of the things I thought was interesting is they want to take a vote to see who supports it, just to get people on record. Not that it does anything about it one way or another.
Just a little test.
Just to make people state whether they're for or again. For it or again it.
I'd like to see a picture of the toilet paper in the White House, because I think it's got the Constitution printed all over it.
You think?
I don't know.
So anyway, if you didn't listen to that episode, you might want to go back and listen to it, because it looks like that it's going to come about.
Yeah, because there are some interesting things about if he does declare an emergency, what that actually means, and different ways it can be challenged and whatnot. I think even I saw an article that Trump said, I know there's going to be lawsuits coming from this. So,
yeah, good job. Think so, after all this time. And then the other one was, there was an update on our Supreme Court justice situation here in West Virginia. Yes. I mean, I know we got them all filled, but they were still settling the deal with the one with the sexual couch.
Yep. Justice Laufrey was actually sentenced, I think, on Tuesday?
Yeah,
I think it was Tuesday. Anyway, he got sentenced to 2 years in federal prison.
That's right.
So I think it was pretty much a white-collar facility, though. So
might put him in there with El Chapo. He's going to prison, too. They all go in there together.
I think they go to different prisons.
You don't think it's the same one?
No.
But he, in the meantime, in between that, he had come back in with two different motions to dismiss the charges against him that he didn't think they should stand. He had jury tampering involved in it because he said one of the jurists had liked some things on Instagram or something prior to becoming a jury member.
Are you talking about Laufrey?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That he tried to get a retrial saying that it was something wrong with the jury because one of the jurists had liked a couple of postings prior to becoming a jurist,
right,
that had mentioned about, you know, the stuff going on.
Well, I guess if they ask if the jury during voir dire, if they said, have you followed this or any news articles and things like that, and they denied it, I mean, that'd probably be a lie.
Well, it could be, but how many times do you go through Facebook and you just see somebody, you know, they posted something and you just click a thumbs up and keep going? Do you really read it?
You mean like a sympathy like or a...
Yeah, just kind of, or you just see it and it's somebody you know, they seem to be posting something and then you click like on it and you go on through. You don't necessarily read through it and really form an opinion all the time. I mean, a like is not an indictment that you read and studied something.
Well, when people like our episode or our podcast page, I think it's like they really like it.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think
you'll take that, huh? That's your interpretation?
That's what that means.
All right. The last thing I want to do is give a birthday shout out to one of our original dudes that's been with us since day one.
That's right.
Joshua Lee Ard.
He's one of our OG listeners.
That's right. His birthday is the 23rd. He is a new daddy. Of course, he's not as new as he was. He's had this little girl for a while.
I think maybe almost a year now.
Yeah, it's getting close.
Yeah.
And he's just a good dude. We've both guested with him on his podcast that he had. And we just want to say happy birthday, Joshua. And thanks for listening. And thanks for being a good dude.
Happy birthday.
We're not going to sing it, though.
No, no.
We don't get paid enough for that.
Yeah, we'd have to pay you to listen to me sing happy birthday. I'm not much of what you might call a singer.
More of a singer?
Yeah. I can bust out a rap here and there.
Yeah, well, me too. I got to get you to lay me down a beat, though.
That's true.
And then I can do the rap. I have to get dust off my Mark Zuckerberg tune.
I remember, this has probably been about, maybe over 10 years ago, maybe even like 15 years ago, we were at there's a Halloween party here in town, and Sydney was just finally getting a little bit older, so we were kind of in somewhat of the same social circles. So I'd see her around at parties and things like that periodically. Mm-hmm. And so we were at this my friend's house at a Halloween party, and they had a karaoke machine downstairs, and I did Funky Cole Medina, and that's one of my jams. I can do a good Funky Cole Medina.
Hell yeah.
And so somebody came up to Sydney upstairs and said, "Boy, Sydney, you should have seen it. Your Uncle Michael just knocked Funky Cole Medina out of the park downstairs."
And she couldn't be prouder, could she?
That's right.
Only thing that could have been worse is if her dad had done it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this episode, I wanted to do about depositions. Now, depositions are something that happen all the time in litigation. Lots and lots and lots of times. I can't even begin to tell you how many depositions I've gone to. I mean, thousands, maybe. I don't even know.
I think I've been involved in three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people haven't. They don't know what they are. Because usually when I do my pre-depo spiel to somebody, I always want to explain to them, have you ever given your depo before? Do you know what it is? And usually they say no. So what is a deposition if you don't know? Why don't you tell everybody what a deposition is, and I'll see if it jives with my definition.
Well, a deposition is where they bring you in a room and they have a stenographer or a court reporter or whatever you call them, because it is actual under oath testimony.
Yep.
That you have to give. And you probably have representation, although I don't guess you have to, and there's a lawyer that's there that's asking you questions. And you're supposed to answer, and this will be made part of a legal record, or they will review it to decide if they want to call you as a witness or something, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I have. I said basically it's testimony under oath before a court reporter. There's lawyers present. There's no judge, and usually takes place at one of the lawyer's offices or at a court reporter's office.
Now, here's one thing I was confused about when I was doing some research for this. Are there sometimes judges in the room?
No, not at a deposition.
Okay, because there was like in a couple of them, there were ones that they referred to as a judge that were there, and I would hear lawyers urging them to tell them that they have to do this or they can't do that or something like that.
Well, now there have been several contentious depositions with counsel who were not as reasonable as me.
Everyone I listened to was contentious. I never heard one that wasn't.
Where you might say, well, let's just get the judge on the phone and see what the judge has to say about your antics during this deposition. So I've actually never had to do it, but I've threatened it before.
Well, there were ones that referred to a judge, yeah. But I couldn't tell. I didn't know if that was part of it.
I referred to a judge at a deposition, but usually it's more in the form of, you're being an a-hole. I'm going to call the judge right now, and we'll see what he says.
I'm going to call the judge on you.
See what he or she says about this. It's sworn testimony, so you have to tell the truth. In some instances, a deposition is actually read or shown to the jury at trial if the witness is unavailable, too. And when I say shown, it could be a video deposition, because some depositions have video cameras and all that. So now there's different types of depositions. There's discovery depositions, something called deposition taking subpoena duces tecum.
Duces tecum.
Duces tecum. There's an expert deposition. That might be like a medical provider or some sort of expert witness. And then there is something called a deposition in aid of execution, it's kind of like a discovery deposition, but it happens after you get a judgment against somebody.
Hmm.
So there's probably some different kinds as well, but those are probably the main ones that you would come across. Mm-hmm. Your run of the mill flavors.
Okay.
Probably I would say discovery deposition is going to be your vanilla. You see the most of that.
I guess that's what I was involved in when I was in one, but I don't really know.
The deposition in aid of execution is probably more like sherbet. It's kind of out there a little bit. You don't have it that often.
Sherbet's pretty plain. We usually have rainbow sherbet around here.
Do you?
Yeah.
I haven't had sherbet in years.
We love sherbet, Herbert.
So the discovery depositions, like I said, they're the most common. And these generally have very open-ended questions because it's something that you're doing as part of discovery to try to learn more. And you can ask any question that you might think could possibly lead to other discoverable information. So it's very open-ended as what might be germane to the case. So it could be anything.
Okay. Expert
depositions and video depositions are generally prepared to be used as a substitute for a live witness at trial. So the questions there are generally more on point. They're less kind of exploratory. They're actually more kind of focused on how you do a, a testimony at trial, because that actually might be what the jury sees. You don't want a jury like losing interest if something you're going to present to trial, if basically you're rambling on and they're talking about questions and you're like, what was your first job? Well, when I was 16, I was worked at a grocery store as a grocery bagger. I mean, the jury doesn't care about that. You know, they're an expert witness. Why do they care about, you know, so you're not going to ask the expert witness those kinds of questions. They're going to be more tailored about what their actual career is now and what their expertise is.
Yeah.
Now, depositions, they are transcribed by the court reporter. So after the court reporter takes it all down, they will type it up. They'll ask you if you want to go ahead and order a copy there. And you don't actually have to order it right then. You can wait and hold off and see if you need it. That's one way to kind of save some money for litigation costs. If you don't order it, you still have to kind of pay the court reporter a fee generally for coming and doing it.
I would think so.
Yeah, but if you order the transcript, it's kind of like an additional fee. Sometimes they occur over the phone, so you might
We're going to charge you for taking the pictures, but if you want any of them pictures, you got to pay us extra for them.
Yeah, it's like a sitting fee. That actually is what they call it, too, I think, is a sitting fee.
Really?
Yeah. So it can be over the phone, too. You might need leave of court to do that, though. You might need like the judge's permission to take a deposition over the phone, because that's really not preferred.
Well, you may not be able to really establish it's the right person.
Well, I mean, they have to be sworn in somewhere, so you would have somebody swear them in at wherever they are. So there's ways around it. Or the court reporter might be where the witness is, and they show an ID to the court reporter and swear them in there, and you ask the questions over the phone to them.
I didn't read it, but I saw something where it said on some site about why you can't use Skype for a deposition. But I didn't read the details of that. But it said that you should not use Skype for a deposition.
Well, I think you probably could. If you had the court reporter set up with the witness, and then they were there at that one facility, and then you were Skyping in from a different location, I think that'd probably be fine. I wouldn't do it. I mean, there's no real need to Skype it. Just use a phone. So.
Yeah, especially if you're just recording it anyway, huh? All you need is a voice. You don't need to see them.
Yeah. Well, you know, my whole theory about telephonic depositions and things like that, if you have a case that is worth litigating and worth going to trial on, then it's probably worth you traveling and putting your butt in the seat next to the witness. I mean, that's my whole thought about phoning in depositions.
Well, I would think too, you want to see this guy and see what kind of character he is.
Yeah.
I think you can learn a lot more about looking at him and looking him in the eye and seeing how he answers the questions and stuff. If you're deciding whether to use him as a witness or deciding if you think he's believable and, you know, stuff like that.
Well, and that's with videotape depositions too. There's this whole thing where basically if you try to, well, this is one tactic, you try to have the witness sitting at the end of the table. So they're looking out the window, and then basically you have the camera looking at them. And then if they look out the window or are looking around, it looks like they have shifty eyes. So the so the jury doesn't believe them.
So you're setting them up for failure, huh?
Yeah. I mean, this is how in-depth like stuff like this gets.
That should not be a thing. That's not right.
Ask me how I know this stuff.
I don't want to know. Don't tell your trade. That's like magicians telling you how the trick works.
Kind of a little bit. So
we don't want to see how the sausage is made. Just feed us the sausage.
Now, the great thing about depositions is that basically it locks somebody into a story or a certain way they're going to testify. So that way, if they change their testimony at trial, you can impeach them. So basically, you can point out to the jury their inconsistencies in their statements. So, which makes them look less credible. So that's why depositions are always a good thing to take if you can. I have like a certain pre-depo talk that I always give clients. I'll pretend like I'm going to give you advice.
Give me some advice. I need advice. If there's anybody that needs advice, it's me. I'm a lost soul.
All right. So, hey, Tommy, have you ever given your deposition before?
Yes.
Okay. What kind of case was that?
Personal injury claim.
Personal injury claim?
And I investigated the injury.
You investigated the injury?
Mm-hmm.
Were you a private eye?
No, I worked for the railroad, and it was an employee that was injured.
Oh, okay. So you kind of know how a deposition goes then, right?
Right.
So there's going to be a court reporter present. There's going to be a lawyer who's going to ask you some questions. It's very important during this deposition that you let the lawyer finish the question before you answer it. Do you understand that?
Yes.
And the reason why is because that way the court reporter is going to take all this down. We want to have a clear transcript. So it's important that they are able to take down both person's answer or question and answer. Do you understand?
Yes.
And it also gives me a chance to make any kind of objection I might have if I think the attorney's asking an improper question. So if you answer before I get a chance to make that objection, you're kind of cutting me out of the middle there. You understand that?
Yes.
All right. You're doing a good job of listening to the question before you answer.
Yes.
But that's kind of like my pre-depo spiel that I go into about, you know, like also I would make sure that keep your voice up because the court press take everything down. But that's kind of pretty much it. So,
well, and you don't want to anticipate the question either because you might be wrong and answer to something that you didn't have to answer to or something.
Exactly.
So you want to wait till the end.
Now, I did say there are certain objections that you can make at depositions, but they're limited. They're not the same as you'd make at a trial.
Yeah, I've got a lot of questions about that from some of the research, but I'll hold off until you give what you have before okay. I ask you about some of these, because you might answer the question.
Objection. You're going on too far.
No. Sustained.
Before we move on to objections, are there any pending motions before the court?
Why, absolutely, there is a pending motion. We would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
All right. Well, who do we have on the docket?
Well, today on the docket, we have back with us our good friends at the delicious Green Chef.
So what is Green Chef? Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company that makes eating well easy and affordable with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle.
And as you may or may not know, Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh. They have gone together to create one awesome company with a wide array of meal box offerings. So if you're already a member of HelloFresh, keep doing that and sign up for Green Chef as well.
That's right. So HelloFresh is even better now. They have Green Chef.
That's right. They'll get you coming and going.
So Green Chef lets you choose from a wide array of easy-to-follow lifestyles and select organic ingredients. They can basically let you kind of pick which kind of diet you're on. And by diet, I mean like, not like diet, but like nutrition plan.
That's right. There's something for everyone with Green Chef. It's easy to eat well and discover new recipes every week that you'll love to cook. And you can switch up your meal plan whenever you're ready to try a new way to eat.
Green Chef's expert chefs have designed flavorful recipes for your lifestyle that go way beyond ordinary substitutions.
A Green Chef's plans include paleo, vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, Mediterranean, heart smart, lean and clean, keto, gluten-free, and omnivore.
Now, one of the things I got, I had a chicken pho, which last time we talked about this, we talked about whether it's pronounced pho or pho. I mean, technically it's pho, but I like to say pho. It makes me feel better.
P-H-O.
Pho sure. But anyway, the chicken...
Forget about it.
Forget about it. The chicken pho was excellent. Everybody in the family loved it. It was delicious.
My personal favorite was a steak mojo. That was what we had, and it was delicious.
And I really like the instructions on how to make it. It comes on a very clear sheet. There's some pictures in there. It tells you exactly what you need to do. Even I can do it.
Well, you and I demonstrated that even under the influence of alcohol, we can cook good meals when given proper instructions, and they supply you with the proper instructions.
That's true. You have to supply your own alcohol, though.
Yes, there's a hidden video somewhere on the internet that shows this.
So right now, for $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/court.
Now, that's .us, not .com, so for $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/court. Bon appetit!
Your mouth,
Mike and Tommy.
Your mouth's going to thank you. So, now, there's different objections you can make at depositions, which are different than the ones you make at trial. And the general reason for that is, well, there's a couple reasons. First of all, especially if it's a discovery deposition, you really don't want to limit, well, depending on your side, the general theory is you don't want to limit what kind of testimony can come out because it's for discovery. So questions that might not be something you can get in at trial, you can get in at a deposition, knowing you're probably never going to get them in at trial. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, but that would mean they would have to edit the deposition then something if they were going to play it back at trial or something?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there, you do have to edit out questions at depositions if, like...
Does somebody review it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, and they have the editing technique to do that. And that is part of the deal, that if there's something in a deposition and the witness is unavailable or you plan on using that transcript, I mean, you have to cut that out for sure. So, and that's something that gets brought up in pretrial conferences. There might be... like a motion to limit it or something like that. And there's arguments about whether or not that question should come in. So that can be litigated as well. But the general objections you probably make at a deposition, the one that I say is the most is, you'd say, objective form. And basically, when you say objective form, you're saying that the form of the question asked is not correct. One of the worst ones is a compound question. And a compound question can be a problem because the answer, if it's basically two questions in one.
Right.
So if the deponent says no, then what part, which one are they saying no to? You know, it's very confusing.
Right.
So that's one of the, probably the primary ones that you get there is objective form. You probably say that one the most, I would say. Objection, asked and answered. This is if basically the attorney is asking harassing questions over and over again that where somebody's already asked.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's like 3:30 and you got someplace to be and the guy's kind of getting a little long in the tooth about asking the same type stuff, you might just start making objections, make it a little get a little hostile in there just to kind of move them along.
What if the lawyer just doesn't want him to answer?
Well, I'm going to get to about them answering.
Okay.
Now, the other kind of objection is a privilege. Like, that's some sort of privileged communication. Like, basically, if the attorney said, well, what did your lawyer tell you about that? And that's a no-no, because you can't ask them a question about an attorney-client communication. That's privileged communication, and it doesn't come in. Also, if the witness is just a regular witness and they're asking them to make some sort of legal conclusion, then you could object to that. So, objection calls for a legal conclusion. Now, for most of these, with the exception of privilege, the person, the deponent, the person being deposed, would probably go ahead and answer the question, because these, you're just preserving that objection for the record. So that way, when you do go to try to put this transcript in or something like that, then you argue, you say, well, judge, I objected to this question here because it's a compound question. I objected to it then, I'm objecting to it now. So you want to put those in the record. Now, the reason you want them to go ahead and answer is because you don't have a judge there to make these rulings on these kinds of things. So you want to keep it moving and keep it flowing. And the purpose of these generally is discovery.
So if the judge agrees with your objection, they'll just edit that question out.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. But go ahead and answer it just in case he doesn't agree. Overruled.
Yeah.
Then you got
to
answer.
Now, there's certain times where you instruct somebody not to answer a question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very rare. You know, you don't make a habit of doing that because it's not really what the deposition is supposed to be. But if it's like, if they ask a question about privilege, I would say objection. That's a privileged communication. I'm going to instruct my client not to answer that. Mm-hmm. Or you would say objection that could possibly lead to some sort of self-incrimination. I'm going to instruct my client not to answer that. Or different things like that. But pretty much for the most part, or I mean, if it's getting really harassing and they've asked the same question over and over again, objection, asked and answered. I'm going to tell my client not to answer that because he's already answered it or she's already answered it 10 times.
Well, I came across this one case from 2017. And it said that in a deposition, there's no judge available. So the lawyer's behavior, good or bad, depends entirely on them. And said, we see this regarding objections. In front of a jury, we lawyers avoid objections because the jury will not understand. They may think we are trying to hide something, which sometimes we are. But with no judge and no jury, it's Katie bar the door. Some lawyers go crazy objecting at depositions. In one case, a lawyer was sanctioned by a New York federal court because she objected some 600 times in one deposition. At some point during the 8-hour deposition, the parties called the judge's office, but the judge could not take the call. He told them to make concise objections that only addressed the form of the question. But the lawyer continued to make frequent objections that appeared to affect the testimony of the witness. Her objections appeared on 400 pages and 83% of the transcript.
Good Lord.
Later, the lawyers contacted the judge's office again. The judge instructed the offending lawyer, to just mark questions in the transcript which she felt should not be answered. Despite that instruction, the lawyer instructed the witness, a police officer, not to answer those questions. This lawyer, an assistant corporate counsel, instructed the witness not to answer 20 times. The magistrate ordered the city of New York to pay for the deposition. The judge found that the lawyer sometimes objected, asked, and answered, even though the question had never been answered.
Yeah.
Sometimes she objected based on relevance and harassment, even though the question was relevant. For an example, he cited, opposing counsel said, did you see yourself on the video? The witness said yes. The opposing counsel said, what were you doing? That offending lawyer said, objection, vague. And the witness said, what? Where? And said, another example said, The offending lawyer said, objection, asked and answered. And opposing counsel said, asked and answered is not an appropriate objection. So then the counsel replied, harassment. And he said, none of these are. And he said, it is, she said, it is harassment. They were arguing over what was harassment, what had been asked and answered. And she just didn't want him to say anything.
Yeah. I remember one time I objected in a deposition. It's objection form. And the attorney's like, what's wrong with it? just like, well, first of all, it's a compound question. Second of all, it's leading. Third of all, I don't like your tie. I didn't actually say that, but I wanted to.
Well, I saw a lot of them that were like that, though.
Yeah.
They were like, well, you want to do something about it? I'll whoop you, buddy. I'll whoop you.
Oh, yeah. I had one. I have this transcript, too. I knew going into this deposition, this other attorney was just a kind of a bully and just a little bit of a piece of work. And he had
piece
a
piece of what?
Work.
Oh, okay.
He had a couple documents he wanted to show my client. And in a deposition, the thing you're supposed to do is you hand it to the attorney first. And you let the attorney look at it.
Right.
And then you hand it to the client. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is tried and true. That's what you're supposed to do.
Because your attorney is your human shield.
Well, and it's just, it's a very courteous thing to do. And that's how you're supposed to, the demeanor you're supposed to have with this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, the attorney starts off by saying that my client's some sort of racist and all this stuff. Has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with this litigation at all. Basically, he's just trying to set the tone and be
established
a bully.
Character.
Yeah. And so not even that. I don't know what he was just being an a-hole. Mm. And so I objected to it. I mean, because it truly had nothing to do with this case whatsoever. And then he hands tries to hand my client a document. And I just reached over and just snatched it out of his hand. And I said, you're going to hand that to me first before you give it to him. Do you understand? And he said, let the record reflect that Mr. Meadows just yanked that document out of my hand. And I'm like, yeah, I did. I was like, give it to me first.
Yeah, yanker.
Yeah. So that was a fun case.
Better to be a yanker than a wanker.
No doubt. certain things that are objections that you don't make at depositions, hearsay, because basically hearsay is inadmissible at trial regardless. So it doesn't matter. Assume facts not in evidence. You wouldn't object to that because basically this is a discovery deposition. You're trying to find what's not in evidence. There is nothing in evidence, really.
Right.
That's probably the main ones you wouldn't make. I don't think you would objection vague. I don't know if that would be a good question either. I mean, I guess if the question is vague, I would just say object to form. I wouldn't say vague. And really, you're not supposed to make objections that go on and on because there's different things called speaking objections where, you know, if they ask a question and says, where were you on the night of so-and-so and were you driving a blue car that night? Objection to form. My client knows that he was not at that place that night. He has already testified that he was at somewhere else and he doesn't own a blue car. Like that would be what you might call a speaking objection where I'm essentially testifying for my client.
Right, and you're telling, giving his answer.
And giving the answer and then I nudge him under the table and say, that's what you're supposed to answer.
Right? Yeah.
So, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to say just objection to form,
yeah,
compound question or whatever. And then they rephrase it or whatever.
Well, I just kind of felt like from my review of what I looked at, that there are no rules. You can do whatever you want because it's like this one, the guy, evidently there was a guy that was being sued by the company that he had worked for because he went to work for a rival company and they were like an educational training type thing. Mm-hmm. And what he was evidently was being accused of is he was taking the information from the one he worked for and giving it to the new one that he was being hired by.
Yeah.
And
trade secrets.
Yeah. So yeah, intellectual property or whatever. So they were evidently he was involved in a lawsuit concerning that.
IP.
Yeah, that too. So IP too. They would ask him question. Every question they asked, I don't care what it is, the lawyer that was with him in a very low and monotone would go, argumentative, calls for speculation, leads to a conclusion. I advise my client not to answer. That was the way he answered every single question
and then,
that was asked. The guy never answered anything. He sat right there, and the lawyer said that to every single question as he went along.
Wow.
And after a while, it was like this. Same objections, same advice. He didn't even, he couldn't even keep saying it. He was saying those things so many times.
What was the outcome of that?
Same advice. And he let the guy answer one question. It was weird. It was like, he let him answer it. And it was like, the guy knew to answer it. And they were asking, there was evidently somebody else that was also under suspicion of doing that. Mm-hmm. And they were named this person and said, isn't it true they worked for there and they also were supplying information? And the lawyer didn't say anything. And the guy looked and he goes, I don't know. That was it. That was the only answer he ever gave. And the lawyer, every single question, you know, that's what he would say.
Well, that's one of the other things I usually instruct people when they give their deposition before. I said, always say, do not guess at anything. If you don't know the answer to a question, say, I don't know. If you don't understand a question, then say, I don't understand your question. Because I want to make sure that you understand it's clear what you're answering. I don't want you to guess. So that's another part of my spiel that I didn't.
Oh, and there's some people that are very good at that. I saw one with this lady that looked like she was stoned. She was wearing sunglasses. It was a videotaped one, and she was wearing sunglasses. Oh,
that's not going to go well in front of a jury.
And they're there, and they would ask her questions. She'd say, I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know. And he said, well, you gave evidence to this sheriff. Do you remember him being at your house? No. Are you saying he wasn't at your house? Then this didn't happen? Yes, it did happen. Well, then what day was he at your house? I don't know if he was ever at my house. Then how did you give him the information? I'm sure that he was there at some point. Well, do you know what day he was there? No, I don't recall. And it's just round and round and round. And most of her answers were, I don't know, or I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's always frustrating for an attorney. You sit there for 2 or 3 hours and you don't learn a single thing.
No. Uh-uh.
Now, if you instruct your client not to answer a question, sometimes what will happen is the attorney will ask the court reporter to certify that question. And this is in different jurisdictions. And basically, by certifying that question, is what they're doing is they're marking it specially. So that way, it's easy for them to call that back up and they can present it to the judge. So you could do a motion to compel. The witness to answer that question. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy because it's certified. So then you go and argue that in front of the judge. And the judge will say, okay, counselor, why did you instruct your client not to answer this question? Well, blah, blah, blah. And the judge will say, that's not really a reason why you should do that. I'm going to instruct your client to answer that.
Well, that one guy, he had to answer that a lot.
And I'm going to have you or your client pay for them to go back and take the deposition again for that question. So they have to pay for the court reporter to come. They have to do all that. So that's usually the sanction that happens for these discovery issues, is that people get attorney's fees and costs against them.
That's good. I would say, because it was frustrating to me. I mean, it was humorous. Yes, it was funny to watch. But from a standpoint of, here's someone that's involved in something legal, and they're trying to come to a conclusion, and somebody does this, and a lawyer shields somebody doing this, it's like, what's the point? Why even have this if this is what you're going to do? Just say you're going to be an a-hole and you're not going to answer any questions.
Yeah. It just happens. Now, one of the other things I talked about was a deposition subpoena duces tecum. And a subpoena duces tecum basically means production of evidence. So the person who you're taking their deposition subpoena duces tecum is supposed to bring certain documents, what you describe in that subpoena to them.
Like, so, maybe medical records if you were investigating a patient injury or something
exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. And sometimes the deposition never actually even takes place. You go ahead and schedule it, but then you say, if you mail these to me before the deposition and certify them, then there's no need to appear. But sometimes you might actually take a discovery deposition subpoena duces tecum. So you might do this for a couple reasons. You might have done a request for production of documents and they didn't respond to it. Maybe you just want to see if they have these different items in their possession. But you can actually have a deposition subpoena duces tecum where you actually, it's not just somebody who's a medical record provider or some sort of record provider. You're actually taking deposition with these documents. So,
duces tecum.
That's right.
It's like deuces wild.
Now, as far as discovery goes, you usually want to go ahead and conduct your discovery prior to taking a deposition. So you want to send out your interrogatories, you want to send out your request for production of documents and all those things, because you want to go into the deposition with kind of a bit of a game plan as to what you're going to try to ask about. Now, if you don't have any of those documents, the problem is you get in there to take this deposition and the person will say, well, I don't know. Well, do you have anything at home that'll help you? Well, yeah, I got some at home. But the problem is you can only take that person's deposition one time. You don't get to have another bite at the apple and take their deposition over and over and over again.
Right.
So you've kind of wasted your shot if you don't have all the information before. So a lot of times depositions will be scheduled, and if discovery responses aren't in, you have to continue the deposition or reset it or renotice it, because you can't take the deposition without all that discovery in hand, because you really need it. That's how it goes. Now, you can take a deposition for a second time in certain circumstances. One would be if there's some sort of new evidence, or if there's some new discovery response that the person answered that they hadn't answered at the prior deposition, you can do what's called an update depo. But those are kind of used pretty sparingly, and they don't happen quite often, and attorneys usually object to them for whatever reason. But you can do an update depo too. Or if you took a deposition at the beginning of the case, and now it's 2 years later and you're getting close to trial, you could probably do an update depo at that point too, to kind of find out what's going on now. The other time you might take a deposition twice in one case, again, is the deposition in aid of discovery. And basically this is used whenever you have a judgment against somebody and you're trying to figure out how you're going to collect on the judgment against them. And again, this usually takes place after there's been some sort of post-judgment discovery as well, like a fact information sheet, which lists their assets and things like that. But you get to take their deposition and you want to find out what they have so you can take it. So
I wouldn't want to tell you.
Well, you're going to have to.
I would have my lawyer advise me not to answer that question.
Well, here's the problem, too. If you refuse to answer questions, especially one in aid of execution, you already had the judgment against you. The judge, there's a real possibility the judge might find you in contempt of court. And the problem with that is while not paying a debt is basically, you can't be thrown in jail for not paying a debt, we don't have debtor's prison, you can be thrown in jail for being found in contempt of court and basically mm-hmm. refusing a court order.
Yeah.
So if you basically get a judgment against you, and you go to one of these depositions in aid of execution, and you're saying, I'm not going to tell you anything, you know, I'm not saying a word, whatever. And you get the attorney goes to the judge and says, hey, they're not answering any questions. Can I get an order compelling them? So then the judge will enter an order compelling them to answer the questions. You take the deposition again, and I'm not answering that. So then you go for a motion for contempt, and the judge will basically say, all right, I'm going to find them in the contempt for not following the order to answer these questions. Mm-hmm. And then usually what will happen is the judge will sit down for a show cause hearing to show cause why they shouldn't be found in contempt of court for not answering it. And they might be thrown in jail for that, because it's not the fact you're not paying the debt or whatever. The mm-hmm. fact is you're basically ignoring the court order.
So, good. Cause I heard some that need to be thrown in jail.
Did you?
Yeah.
So now once you've gone through the deposition, the witness has already been sworn in. All the attorneys in the room get to ask their questions, because all attorneys get to ask questions at these things, not just the one attorney. Mm-hmm. You can object to leading questions too. So basically you can't ask leading questions of a witness either.
Unless, didn't you want to kill that person?
Exactly. That's another objection, but that's just a form objection. But basically after everybody gets to depose all the different witnesses and ask all their questions they want, then you come to the very end of the deposition. And at the very end of the deposition, do you know what happens?
Mm. Yeah, you turn off the recorder.
I know, but is there anything that, do you remember in your experience what they say?
Do you want a copy of it or something like that?
Well, they'll ask you that.
Yeah.
There's one thing else they ask you.
Is there anything you want to add?
No, what one of the attorneys will say, and it doesn't have to be the one who noticed it, or just one attorney will generally just take the lead and say, basically, so the questions you answered today are going to be typed up by the court reporter into a transcript, and you have the right to read that deposition transcript and review the answers before it's submitted. In the alternative, you can also rely on the accuracy of the court reporter if you trust that they've taken down everything accurately. So mm-hmm. you can read it or waive it. If you decide you want to read it, if there's any changes that you want to make to it, like you think there's errors, they'll produce what's called an errata sheet, and you can note those on there. But you can't actually make substantive changes to the document right. itself. So do you want to read or waive?
Yeah.
And you'll just say, uh-huh. I said, well, no, I need an answer. Do you want to read or waive?
Well, and I'm sure that the railroad lawyer that was there with me probably answered that question for me.
Yeah.
And I mean, probably sent it to the railroad for them to read. And
yeah. And I'll say, well, I mean, it just depends. I mean, sometimes I'll read it. Sometimes I won't. If it's just a discovery deposition about somebody's,
it's nothing too dramatic.
Yeah. I'll just say wave. But yeah. If it's something that I think we might need, there's a lot of dates, a lot of issues like right. that. I'll probably read it to make sure that I think it's all correct. And then the court reporter will say, all right, do you want to order a copy? Mm-hmm. And usually one attorney will say, you know, oh, yeah, I'll order a copy. And everyone will say, well, I'm going to hold off right now. and they're the ones that are not trying to spend money on the case. So
I saw one where they were swearing a lady in, and they said, raise your right hand. She raises up her left hand, and they said, no, your right hand. So she raised it up too. She's sitting there with both hands up in the air. They're saying, all right, now, do you swear the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? She goes, the whole truth. I said, what? It sounds like a multiple choice question.
Yeah.
You know, the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. The whole truth. Like, I'm not, that's a yes or no.
Nothing but the truth.
Yeah. It's not a selection.
All the above.
I thought she was going to say, I don't swear.
Well, did you come across any more funny depositions when you were looking this up?
I just found that celebrities seem to have trouble with depositions. There's a lot of cases where celebrities get called in, and of course celebrities are famous and have money, and they have people that do things for them. They don't feel like they should answer to lawyers and stuff. They're above all that. So they don't seem to take kindly to these things. So it seems that in 2013, when Tom Cruise was getting separated from Katie Holmes, that he had to give a deposition because she was trying to get, I guess, complete rights for Suri, their daughter.
Yeah.
Because she said he wasn't really a present father. So said the lawyer said, now, your counsel has publicly equated your absence from Suri for these extended periods of time as being analogous to someone fighting in Afghanistan. Are you aware of that? And Cruz said, I didn't hear the Afghanistan, but that's what it feels like. And certainly on this last movie, it was brutal. It was brutal. So that was his excuse for not being around. Making movies is just like fighting in Afghanistan.
Sure.
And then there was Kanye West in 2014.
Oh, this is going to be a good one.
There was a lawsuit in which he was accused of beating a photographer and smashing the photographer's camera. During the deposition, which was obtained by TMZ, he had some fantastic standout quotes. One of the best and most humble was, I'm the smartest celebrity you ever effing dealt with. I'm not Britney Spears. And he also didn't take too kindly to questioning from the plaintiff's attorney, stating, I'm in the business of trying to make dope crap for the world. You're in the business of representing scums and trying to make as much money as long as there's this lapse in the law. Now,
I'm sure that went over really well in front of a jury.
Yeah, and Kanye West, you know, he's one of the smartest people in the world, so it's hard to match wits with him.
I'll tell you what, I always tell people this too. I said, you might get frustrated in there, you might be upset. I said, do not come off as an a-hole in this deposition, because it will make you look horrible.
And you are no Kanye West.
Well, I'm telling you, a deposition transcript is brutal to read. I mean, they do not come off well.
Now, here was one. I had forgotten that this was actually in a deposition when all the stuff came out that got Paula Deen in trouble.
Mm.
She was actually giving a deposition because there was a woman that worked for her that said that Deen had subjected her to sexual harassment and racial discrimination. Top quotes from the deposition included when Deen exclaimed that of course she used the N-word, and then when asked about the context explained, well then, tell me the other context in which you've used the N-word. She said, I don't know, maybe in repeating something that was said to me? And the lawyer said, like a joke? No, probably a conversation between blacks. I don't know. She also explained the other kinds of totally PC jokes she tells, saying, the lawyer said, okay, would you consider use of the N-word in a mean way? She said, that's kind of hard. Most jokes are about Jewish people, rednecks, black folks. Most jokes target, I don't know. I didn't make up the joke. I don't know. I can't. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
And the lawyer says, okay. And she says, look, they usually target, though, a group. Gays or straights, black, redneck, you know, I just don't know. I just don't know what to say. I can't myself determine what offends another person.
You know, like in Tom and Jerry.
It's like, keep talking, you're digging the hole deeper.
You know in Tom and Jerry, where Tom is like, he's getting really hungry, and he sees something, and all of a sudden it turns into a ham
or
a T-bone steak. Yeah. I think if I was the lawyer in that case, I'd be sitting there looking at Paula Deen.
Just feeding her some more. Like, huh?
Oh, my gosh.
The more she talked, the worse it got.
Keep talking.
Here's the thing. she didn't even know enough to say the right thing. I don't think she could have found the right thing to say. She was so deep into it. I mean,
objection.
That was just her.
Objection. This line of questioning is horrible for my client.
Objection. She's revealing her true self. She has a facade we have to maintain.
Can I stick a slab of butter in her mouth?
Now, this next one, this is the one that made me question about a judge in the room. Lil Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Lil Wayne had to give a deposition. He and Quincy Jones got in a legal battle over the film The Carter. And so he was called. He had to countersuit in. Quincy Jones was suing him, and he was suing them back. And so they had a deposition. They said, Lil Wayne said, what's his name? The lawyer asked him a question. And Lil Wayne looked at his lawyer, and he said, what's his name? And the judge, it says the judge said, Pete Ross. And Lil Wayne looked at him and said, Pete Ross, that's a stupid-ass question. And so he also consistently made no sense. He said he was sitting there, and Lil Wayne points to the judge, motions to the judge, and he says, he can't save you. And the lawyer says, what does that mean? Lil Wayne says, I was talking to myself. But he basically was threatening him.
Yeah.
And he said, then he gave fantastic answers. Lil Wayne said, he repeated the question. The question was, how would you describe yourself in the media? And Lil Wayne said, how would I describe my image in the media? I wouldn't describe it. The lawyer said, well, if you had to describe it, you know, how would you if you had to? And he goes, I don't have to. So
that's a good answer.
He ended up losing $2 million, though.
Yeah.
They didn't take that. Now, the top one, though, was Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber had to give a deposition in 2014 after his bodyguard allegedly beat up a photographer. So he comes across as a supreme a-hole in this video, and it's definitely worth a watch. But if you don't get a chance, some of the highlights are the lawyer says, do you know Raymond Usher IV? Bieber says, no. And the lawyer says, do you know an individual in entertainment by the name of Usher? Bieber says, oh, yeah, Usher. That sounds familiar. Well, that's the guy that gave him his start, you know?
Yeah.
But he didn't know his whole name. He knew Usher, but he didn't know, it didn't register Raymond Usher. So then the lawyer says, do you remember being in Australia ever? And Bieber says, I don't know if I've been in Australia. And he turns to his lawyer. He says, have I been to Australia? Now, I've never been to Australia, but I think if I went, I would remember being in Australia.
I'd say so, too.
I mean, you better be on your toes when you're in Australia. My buddy Leon Keith Chameleon there, he tells me there's all kinds of things there that'll eat your ass if you're not aware of what's going on.
Oh, so it's well known.
You better be aware when you're in Australia. Otherwise, you're going to get eaten.
It is known.
And the last celebrity, this especially caught my eye because I just finished watching the six-part documentary that was on, I don't know, the History Channel or the National Geographic Channel, one of them smart people channels. And they had a six-part documentary called The Valley of the Boom.
Yeah.
And it was about the internet explosion and the browser wars.
The History Channel where they have ancient aliens?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it was all about that. So it was kind of a docudrama because it was partway acted. And then they also had the actual people that were involved. Like Netscape was your like biggest browser at the time, Netscape Navigator.
Oh, yeah.
And then how Microsoft came out and Microsoft was trying to put them out of business. And so Netscape filed a antitrust suit against them. And Janet Reno ended up accepting and charging Microsoft with antitrust violations. So Bill Gates had to give a deposition. And by all accounts, he was actually one of the worst people to ever have in a deposition ever. He wouldn't answer any of the questions. He said, well, if you're winning browser share, that must mean that some other company is producing browsers, and you're comparing your share of browsers with somebody else's share of browsers. Is that not so? And Gates says, you asked me if there are any companies included in that, and now I'm very confused about what you're asking. So boys rephrase the questions. Gates played the artful dodger. It doesn't appear I'm talking about any other companies in this sentence, he replied coyly. So at the conclusion of Gates' deposition segment, Jackson asked, how long did this deposition take? 3 days.
Dear Lord.
It took 3 days to give the deposition. Gates was shown a document sent to him by a Brad Chase, a Microsoft vice president, on March 13th, 1997, that said, we need to continue our jihad next year. Browser share needs to remain a key priority for our field and marketing efforts. Gates said, it doesn't say Microsoft. And they said, well, when it says we, who do you understand he's talking about other than Microsoft? And he said, could mean Brad Chase's group, you know, the group within Microsoft. So Gates was more forthcoming when asked what Chase meant by jihad. He said, I think he's referring to our vigorous efforts to make a superior product and to market that product. But he was just, I mean, you would think that he was the stupidest person in the world because of the way that he answered it back and forth. And I said, at another point, this lawyer pressed Gates on whether he was concerned about competition from those other browsers. After more back and forth about what the term meant and why the question was being posed, Bose lost his patience. Is the term concerned a term that you're familiar with in the English language? But they said this judge, when reviewing the tape, he sat there and laughed out loud watching this because he couldn't believe that a guy in the position that Bill Gates was in was given these kind of answers.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you read representative transcripts like this. I mean, they are pretty funny, but to be the attorney, like asking those questions would be so frustrating.
Yeah. And they found them guilty. They found them guilty. And well, at one point told them they had to break up their business into two separate businesses.
Well, the thing is too, you know, as far as depositions like this, it depends how far you want to take it. If you want to be obstructionist and dilatory and not answer these type questions, then basically it can go on as long as you want.
Be a dill hole? Is that what you said?
Pretty much. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions about some of the topics we talked about. And today it's going to focus on depositions.
Wow.
Good figure.
That's a surprise.
What is a deposition, Tommy?
I've advised my client not to answer.
Okay. First of all, let me tell you something. Legal briefs can go on as long as we need it to. You're going to answer these questions, and if you don't, we're going to get the judge on the phone.
I don't know what the meaning of is. A deposition is when you have a court stenographer, and a witness is sworn in under oath and has to give the statements, and you have one or more lawyers present to ask the questions and be with the person that's a witness and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. What are some different types of depositions that I mentioned?
Well, there are videotape depositions.
That's true.
There are Dos Equis depositions.
Ooh, those sound very interesting.
Yeah, it's the most interesting man in the world does those.
Well, there's discovery depositions.
Yeah.
Which are, you're trying to learn things. They're very open-ended type questions.
You might say discover things?
Discover things.
Uh-huh.
And those kind of depositions, like I usually don't even prepare standard questions. I just kind of, I have like ideas and I kind of wing it and just, I have a conversation with somebody basically.
You wing it?
Wing it.
I want my lawyer to be prepared. I don't want him to wing it.
Well, I'm prepared, but I'm just saying I don't have scripted questions. I'm asking like reading off a document saying like, you know, I'm listening to your answer and then I'm asking you questions based off of your answer.
That's what made me think. I read one where it was a 2-minute deposition. They went in there and it was a family court type situation and the husband and wife getting divorced. So the wife's lawyer, first question she asks is, will you state for the record your name? And the guy just goes off. He goes, after 5.5 years, you don't know my name? That's it? 5.5 years of marriage and you don't know what my name is? No, we just need you to state it for, you know what my name is. Why do I need to state it? You don't know my effing name. We've been married 5.5. That's why we don't have a marriage. You don't even know what my name is.
Oh my gosh.
His lawyer's trying to calm him down and say, you just got to do this part of it. If I'm not answering that question, if she doesn't know my name, I'm not answering that question. You can see what the problem is. It's her. It's not me. And the guy goes, can we have a recess? 2 minutes later after it started, they had to recess from the deposition.
That's family law. That's family law, folks. There you go.
Ali.
The other kind of deposition would be like an expert deposition where you're actually asking an expert to testify about certain kinds of issues and something they have an expertise in. Questions like that, you might actually write down, because you want to ask a very pointed, specific question about something, and you want them to answer that in a certain way. So you might actually write those questions down.
I always think of an expert as a former spurt.
A former spurt?
Yeah, now they're an expert. They used to be a spurt. Now they're an expert.
And then the other one you were talking about was subpoena duces tecum.
Yeah, that's
or a deposition subpoena duces tecum. And that's basically where you're trying to get somebody to come to a deposition.
And bring records with them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I see you jumped in right there.
Vinyl.
You didn't let me finish my question. The court reporter couldn't get all that down.
Oh, yeah. But I got excited because I remembered when you said that it meant bring the records. Bring some paper with you, dude.
All right. And the last question. Name one proper deposition objection.
Compounds question.
And that would be an objection to form.
Objection to form, compound question.
Ding, 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 ding. That's a great one. That's one you say a lot, actually, because people ask compound questions quite frequently.
Have you stopped beating your wife, and do you drive a car?
Exactly. yes? No, it's a truck. What do you mean by car?
What is it? A real car? An SUV?
I don't know what that means. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out there, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.